Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
It's incredible. It's a feeling you can't really describe. And, you know, seeing the family and everyone up there and everyone that supported me and helped me get to this point, there's nothing. Words can't put this into reality, how great it feels. And such an incredible group. Everybody wrote us off from start of playoffs. They had everybody beating us in every round, and we just had that fire, and we knew we had something special. It's incredible. It's incredible to be part of this group right now.
I mean, a little too much on the, people kind of didn't believe in us thing a little bit there from Brad Marchand. How do you say it? How do you say it?
Marchand.
You say Marchand? Marchand. Either way, that's Brad Marchand. See, now I'm going to do it a little bit weird. I've said it many different ways over the years. The point is, that is the type of player that you totally hate, but man, when he's on your team, you love him, right? I mean, come on. Let's be honest. You could say that about Sam Bennett, your guy over there, Owen. Come on, be honest. You love him if he's on your team. I saw your tweets about Sam Bennett last week. Two weeks ago.
I want him
on your team.
I definitely would like him on the team. I'll admit that. But I definitely also think that he has made some horrific plays.
Yes.
That should not be allowed or count as goals or whatever you want to say. I think he's done some questionable stuff. That's my take on Sam Bennett. He's awesome. But
I mean, but every team, can I say almost needs guys like that to win a championship in sports, it feels like?
I think needs is correct, yeah. I mean, I bet you could go through every NHL champion in the past however many years and pick out a rat, scum,
yes.
Like just a guy.
Yes.
Pat Maroon was on the Lightning. Like there's guys all over that really play that role, and I think it's important. I mean, there's
Bill Laimbeer of the Pistons. I mean, go back and watch, right? A little before your time, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's guys on teams that, like, you just, this guy, he's the villain. Everybody hates him. But, man, part of the reason you hate him is because he's so good.
Right.
And he gets under your skin. And he's physical. And he does stuff that you just shouldn't do. And at the end of the day, he hoists the trophy over his head.
Exactly. And I know in locker rooms that I've been on, almost every team I've been on has had a guy that everybody on the team knows is psychotic and will do something that will probably at some point hurt you, but overall,
let me say it this way, all right? In a football coaching world, there used to be a saying I'd have with my football coaching buddies. You got to have a few guys that you definitely need to go you're okay with going to a bar fight with.
Right.
Like, you got to have some guys that I'm going to a bar fight, that's the guy I'm bringing.
Yeah.
And because he's not only with me, he's leading the way, maybe. And if you don't have a few of those guys, you ain't winning nothing.
Yeah, you can't.
Sorry.
You need people to drag you into the fight.
And you need people who are going to do whatever it takes in that fight.
Exactly.
And they don't care. They're not going to play by the rules. Sorry. Yeah. Right?
Yep.
That's the way it goes.
You saw it happen. Bennett, like, scoring goals that probably shouldn't count. Help them win.
I don't disagree. And look, this is not a point that, oh my God, yeah, this is the way you're supposed to win by playing the way Sam Bennett does. The point I'm making is you got to have a few guys like Sam Bennett on your team to mix in with the other kinds of guys who play hockey a totally different kind of way.
Exactly.
And by the way, Brad Marchand is one of these kinds of guys that we're talking about.
That's the thing about Florida is they've got a ton of those guys. They got
maybe
Kachuk,
too many.
They got Bennett.
Yes.
They've got Greer's kind of like that. I mean, they're loaded to the gills with guys with gumption, maybe you could say.
Oh my God.
And it's fun to watch them play. I'm grateful that we're getting to see such a strong team.
The first dynasty, we said this yesterday, and I'm sorry, I know you were working over there.
Oh,
I really apologize. The first, we said yesterday, we were talking about dynasties. the first dynasty. By the way, welcome to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. That is the voice of Owen Parker, and also we have Josh Schmidt here producing today. So the first dynasty I ever remember was the Islanders, 1980s, right, growing up. Sure, you've heard about them, seen them, your dad's talked about them. Their goalie was this. Billy Smith was this.
Yes,
their goalie was the biggest he butt-ended Lindy Ruff in the eye, which is a famous clip.
I've seen
and
that.
Lindy going after him. Billy Smith was a guy that just he didn't care.
Yeah, there's a few goalies in the history of the league like that. Hextall was a little bit of that.
Ron Hextall was totally like this.
Ray Emery was a little bit of that. There's some guys that'll get after it. It's important. It's a role that needs to be filled. I think a lot of kids coming up could carve out a path for themselves. I talk about this when I coach a lot. Like, get comfortable being uncomfortable with what you're doing.
Like, I like it.
Maybe be a little on the edge if you want to. Like, if you have that in you, bring it out. Like, it's valuable. It's not everybody has it. And like we're talking about here, you look at almost every championship team in every sport, they've got guys like that. And it's fun to watch those guys play, and people love those guys. They're fan favorites. It's important.
Is Binnington the newest version of this with a goalie?
Exactly.
Is he?
I mean, he's not
100%.
He had his moments of being an actual good goalie, but he's always been like a trash talker.
Loose, crazy.
Yeah,
he's never.
He tried to fight Marc-Andre Fleury this season.
That's right. Yeah.
It's Marc-Andre Fleury's last year in the league. Like, the guy's crazy.
You know, I'm thinking about all this right now, and you're right. I think about even the people we know who've been in that role in Buffalo as fighters, Rob Ray and Andrew Peters. I think both of them would tell you kind of like that wasn't what they were planning on doing as they were growing up.
Oh, I don't think anybody really plans on that.
But they understood that that was the way for them to get into the league after knowing that they were a little bit less skilled but better at that particular skill, right?
Yeah.
And that's important. How they could do it.
You got to recognize your own self-scout. You got to know what you got. And you got to work on work with what you got, exploit your strengths and hide your weaknesses. And if that means you can be that kind of guy, then you'll have a place.
The Panthers did win the cup last night. I will ask you now that I have your mic open here, what you thought about how they celebrated, because I liked it and what they did with the cup. And in case people don't know what I mean, traditionally, kind of the more senior members of the team get the cup first after the captain, and the guys who are veterans have been around. They did it opposite. Those guys did it last year. I loved the fact, and I was rooting for the Oilers big time. Believe me, I was not rooting for the Panthers, but I really liked what they did last night, which is all of the first time winners got to raise the cup first.
Yeah, that was
cool.
Me and my dad were actually having a debate about that while the game was going on.
Oh, wow.
We were talking about, like, who's going to get that cup after Barkov? Because there's nobody that screams like, oh, this guy definitely deserves it. There was no, you know, Ray Bourque to take it next, right? And so he was, Marchand will probably do it.
But he's only been there for a few months.
He's only been there for a little while. Yeah. He's won it already.
Yeah.
I didn't like that idea. My take was I thought they just, because there was nobody that screamed it, I thought they'd just hand it to, like, whoever Barkov saw, an assistant captain, Kachuk. Just, like, give it to someone.
They had a plan.
But they did. And I respect that a lot. I think Schmidt got it first. And that was, my dad said, Marchand or maybe Schmidt, because he's been there all year. And he called it. I got to give him credit.
I love that.
As much as I hate to, that big guy. But
he
nailed it. Like, I think it's a beautiful tradition, and it's always kind of an interesting story. Like, who gets the cup? Who's going to... Who does the team feel deserves this? Because it's a window into a locker room. It's a window into who do we believe, the team believe, impacts the game and the series and us as a whole. And I think it can be really interesting to see that from that perspective. Because I think outside of it, when you're a reporter or you're a fan or whoever you are, you make assumptions and you think, I think this guy is a guy that the team is really important to this team, and they probably are. But I think there's internal factors that play a big role that I don't know that everybody realizes. And I think that's kind of a window into that world that I think is really interesting to see at the end of the year.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Let's just play a game here. This is totally far-fetched. I get it. If the Sabres had won the cup this year.
Okay.
Darlene gets it first.
Darlene gets it.
Who's the next guy from what you know about this team and how it's structured that cup's getting handed off to?
Tuck.
I agree. I think it's Alex Tuck.
It's got to be Tuck.
It's got to be Tuck. I think so.
Hometown kid.
Yeah.
Tuck.
The story.
He hasn't won it. He's been to the final. Yes. He's never won it.
Would have to be.
Tuck. And then from there, it's Thompson, whoever. Like, it kind of just goes down the rabbit hole there. But I think the first thought that I have, without any sort of time to think about this before, maybe there's obvious I'm missing, but Tuck to me would be the name that would get it right after Dalian picks it up.
I think not long after would be a guy literally like Ryan McLeod, who also was there and didn't win it, right? And then he comes in. Like, I think that's a guy that you say, hey, look, dude, you know what it's like to be watching this.
And you came in and you helped it. So, yeah, I think that's a good pick.
I like that. That is Owen Parker. By the way, your dad's joining me today.
Well, look at that. You got both of us.
I got the Parker brothers. Father-son, sorry. The Parker boys.
I'm
there
not
you go.
That old yet.
There, I got you. The Parker boys. Bulldog's going to join me at 11 a.m. today. That's right. Our Chris Bulldog Parker. The reason is, well, a couple things. You know, I go on Show Up with the Bulldog a lot. I go on Jeremy and Joe a lot to talk about the Bills. And I've had Mike Schopa on to talk fantasy football. That's kind of his niche. He loves talking about it. He's really good at it. He's smart. Does a podcast. Hey, let's talk fantasy football. And I said, you know what? I haven't had Bulldog on just to kind of talk, to ask him. I want to reverse roles. I want to ask him questions about sports. And yes, he gives his opinions, but I want to ask specific questions, not just a conversation he has with Mike Schopa, but hey, what do you think about this? What did you think about that? So we're going to do that at 11 a.m. today with Chris Bulldog Parker. And also because he is the Ride for Roswell team, you know, Bulldogs team on Ride for Roswell. We'll talk with him about that. That's coming up just in, 10 days or so, another weekend after this weekend. And that's the Ride for Roswell. That'll be really cool. So we'll chat with Bulldog at 11 a.m. At 10:30, coming up in about 15 minutes from now, going to get with Jonathan Acosta. Jonathan works at WGRZ TV Channel 2 here in Buffalo. And Jonathan actually, you know, he covered Bill's minicamp and, you know, OTAs. He was out there quite a bit. So I'm going to, you know, get his observations. Somebody maybe you don't hear enough from or a lot from. We hear from John Scott, who's the sports director at Channel 2, but haven't heard from John a lot. He's been on with me, I think, once before. But also, John is actually a really big Red Sox fan. And I know that I was watching him and tweeting about the Rafael Devers trade. I know he's into the College World Series that's going on now, some soccer. So we can kind of touch on a lot of topics and get to know Jonathan Acosta a little bit better, too. The Olympics are coming to NBC as well very soon. So we will talk with Jonathan Acosta at 10:30 a.m., Bulldog at 11 a.m. here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. We will also get connected with you throughout the show and throughout the day. And that is always getting connect with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. I came in early today, but I had a bunch of things going on, so I wasn't able to listen to Jeremy and Joe, or whatever we're calling them today, by the way. I wasn't able to listen to their show. Could be Joe, and it could be Jerry and Joe. It could be Jerry and Bruno. I'm not sure, but either way, they were doing their show, and I said to Josh, like, what's been kind of the resonating topic with them today? And Josh said, got a lot of calls on the Sabres today, actually, like some stuff. And then Joe said the same thing. He goes, Sal, I think we had more calls on the Sabres today than we get throughout a normal Sabres season. And it was more of the lens of the cup, right? And what happened, you know, over the last, you know, week and where this team is now. So I want to extend that for the next, you know, 14 minutes before we get to John. And I want to ask you, so let's keep it rolling. 803-0550 is the number to call. Does what happened with Florida and seeing Sam Reinhart score 4 goals, seeing even, Dmitry Kulikov win a cup? I mean, he was only in Buffalo for, 47 games, right? It wasn't a big deal. So we're not going to necessarily count him. But Sam Reinhart's there hoisting the cup. You go back to Eichel, O'Reilly, obviously, that kind of stuff. But even just watching Florida, specifically watching Sam Reinhart, does it say anything about the Sabres to you? Like, do you look at it through a lens of, yeah, that's another failure of the Sabres, or hey, that's sports. Guys move on, they go and have success. I tend to lean more that way. Yeah, I know it didn't work out with Reinhardt. He was also here for, you know, several years, not quite too long, but it wasn't a short time before he was ultimately traded. By the way, Devon Levi comes back in that return and, you know, hope someday that he's, you know, the NHL quality high level goalie that he could, you know, his prospect says. But that's neither here nor there. Does it, when you watch last night, did you watch thinking about the Sabres a lot and thinking about Sam Reinhart and the Sabres and where things have gone wrong? And like, it's just another kind of nail and hammer onto everything we've been talking about. Or does that not really enter your mind? And like, hey, it's sports. And yeah, this is what happens. The Sabres aren't that good and guys have left and they went somewhere else. And it's really more of a product of where they are now, not where they've been. Right. I guess that's more of the question. When you watch Sam Reinhart win and you watch maybe even going back to Eichel win, O'Reilly, whatever. I mean, that's been a few years now. When you watch these guys and they're hoisting the stand. Who was it? Brandon Montour last year, right? Another one. Am I missing anybody last year? The Panthers, they had a couple of them. Montour, Kulikov, and Reinhart.
Rodriguez.
Evan Rodriguez, yeah. You know what did stick out to me, though? Interestingly enough, Josh. So when Sam Bennett gets named Conn Smythe winner, thank goodness it wasn't Reinhart, right? For that reason. Because I'm like, Sam Reinhart could win the Conn Smythe. I didn't think it would happen, but after four goals. When Sam Bennett wins it, and I want to look it up just to make sure. 2014, right? That's when the Sabres draft Bennett and Reinhart. They're the year before Eichel, which was the 2015 draft.
There were four. The top four picks were playing in that game last night.
Wow.
Ekblad, Dreisaitl, oh, Reinhart, yeah. And Bennett.
It's funny. He comes in. Hockey's so different because he comes into the league at 18 years old. He's still only 28. He's been in the league 11 years. One of the things that struck me watching, and when Bennett wins the Conn Smythe, and I thought, boy, that's an, like, I'm thinking about him as a, like, a grizzly vet. He's not. He's got the beard now. He's not. He's 28. But I did think, boy, you know, like, it just takes a while in hockey. It takes a while in hockey. And we talk about goalies for this, but it really is. And I think one of the things that I think that's happened with the Sabres is, yes, they've collected some good young talent. I don't think that we could say that, oh, everybody on their team sucks. That's not the case. They have some good young talent. They haven't had enough of the mix with the young talent to allow it to flourish. And I think that's what's kind of happened when I watch teams like Vegas, like the Blues when they win with O'Reilly, like the Panthers. I mean, even the Oilers who haven't won, right? Like, there's this mix of the older veterans and young talent. And that's why they go out and get a guy like Marchand, who fits right in and can help them. I thought about Brad Marchand, believe it or not. I know it wasn't the ultimate result. When I watched Marchand last night and they talked about what he meant to adding him. Actually, it wasn't Marchand. I'm sorry. It was Tkachuk. About adding Tkachuk. When they talked about adding Tkachuk and what he meant, I thought about Drury. I thought about Drury and said, yeah, that's a big thing the Sabres are missing. They haven't missing that guy to infuse that kind of thing, right? And Tkachuk was a little younger, probably. I'm going to go compare when Drury came to Buffalo versus when Tkachuk came. But man, and this is, oh, and I can ask you this too. I mean, to bring you back in real quick. Like, am I wrong to think that, like, in hockey, one thing that you really have to remember is it takes a while.
It is, yeah. I think it's so, so different from football because of the age guys are drafted at, because of the game just being, I think it just takes more time to get physically and mentally to the point that the best players are at in that league. There's so much to learn in terms of system and speed and skill to develop that it just, you need to be patient. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you see this with all these former Sabres that go on to play and win elsewhere. They weren't bad players here. They may have, some of them performed poorly, but they just needed the time. And I think even maybe more significantly, the insulation and environment
mm-hmm.
to grow and develop as hockey players.
All right. So, This is good comparison then, because I think what I was thinking was kind of right. Drury had been in the league 6 years before he comes to Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Tkachuk was in the league 7 years before he goes to Florida. Tkachuk was actually only 25. He was 7 years in the league already.
I know.
And he was only 25. But think about, like, the league, the arc of his career and to going there and what he meant for that kind of leadership.
Right. And
Tkachuk, and that's right.
Like, at that age, that would have been Tkachuk's, what, third season in the NFL if he was
NHL?
A football player?
Oh, in the NFL? Like, yeah, that's right.
Age-wise,
you're right.
If you think about that.
Because NFL players have to be 3 years out of high school before
right.
they're going to be drafted.
Whereas a hockey player, I was 1 year out eligible when I was getting like that was my year. Was I just graduated and that was the no, not even. I was in high school. I was like that was my year to get drafted in the NHL. I was at Nichols School.
We talk about Devon Levi and goalies a lot, but actually it's everybody. Like it's goalies take a little longer, but like yeah, you can come in and be a really great player. You know what I think about for this right now? I think about Connor Bedard.
Yes.
Right? Like Connor Bedard had not a great second season. He's unbelievable.
Right.
He's great.
And he is a supreme talent, borderline generational level player. And he still has these kind of struggles. If there was a Trevor Lawrence as a quarterback in the NFL, right? He came in as, I think that's a good comparison in terms of hype as a prospect for Bedard.
Yes.
Very highly touted for a long time and expected to do incredible things immediately. And Bedard, I don't think is looked down upon in this to the same degree that Lawrence is at this point in his career. Like I think people on Lawrence are kind of like, I don't know if he's ever going to get there. Bedard, I think everybody thinks he's going to go. It just he's got to get the time. And there's just such a different level of patience required because the kids are young, because the game's, I think, more complex as a combination of physical and mental challenges.
Do you know what this gets me to, though? It gets me to the thing that I've said for the last 2 months. I don't care about getting more prospects. Trade the damn pick. I don't care. What does it matter?
100%.
Right? I mean, I just, every time I hear, oh, the Sabres are the youngest organization in the league, my response is, again?
Right.
Again? Who cares?
We don't want that.
Who cares? Like, it's great to have youth, talented youth. It's great. If you don't nurture that talented youth with the right people and mix above them, it doesn't matter.
Right. Because what's your best case scenario if you take that pick? Zach Benson level guy? Like that comes in, plays first year, it's incredible. Like that's very rare that a guy outside the top five will come in and play in their first year after getting drafted in the NHL. Zach Benson isn't pushing, he's a good player. I like him a lot. I love him. He's not pushing this team into the playoffs. That's not the difference you need. You need to make up a bigger gap than that. So you can't rely on that pick to be some sort of factor for you.
No, I agree. And all you're doing is backloading again with more of what you have. It's kind of the same thing, right?
100%.
It's the same thing of what you have throughout. Again, it's not bad to have good young talent. It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it doesn't matter if you have all the good young talent in the world. If you don't, I think the example is what we've seen the last several years in hockey. If you don't have the people who've actually been through some wars, been some veterans, know how to bring that talent along. And the Sabres do have a few guys like that, but not necessarily to that level or enough guys. But
It's bad to have too much of anything. If you had too many guys, you got too many small-skilled young kids, you need less of that. It'd be bad if they had too many Alex Tucks. You just can't have a team full of the same thing.
And I think that's what the number 9 pick represents to me as we go forward. All right, that is Owen Parker, like I said. Bulldogs joining me at 11. Jonathan Acosta, WGRZ TV Channel 2, going to join me here in a little while. Will the NBA finals, will the title be won? Is that game, is that tonight? Tomorrow night, isn't it? It's not tonight, is it?
That's tomorrow.
It is tomorrow. Okay, I wanted to make sure on that. That is tomorrow night, and I believe Tyrese Halliburton is going to play in the game from what is being said, but that is 3-2 Oak City right now, and they are a 6.5-point favorite in that game at Indiana. Indiana trying to come back to force a game 7, just like the Oilers tried last night. It didn't happen. The Oilers now, they go 2 straight Stanley Cup finals, lose them both, both to the Florida Panthers, and yes, a lot of the Connor McDavid conversation has begun already, especially because of what Steve Levy said yesterday on the Jim Rome show. And you heard that, right, Steve Levy, what he said on Jim Rome show? Oh, you didn't. Oh, I want you to find it in the break, okay? And we'll do that. I'm going to send it to you. I can send you the clip. I'll do that. I want you to hear what Steve Levy said about Connor McDavid and just go, ooh, it might perk your eyes or ears up a little bit. Jonathan Acosta, Channel 2, joining me next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
The window is sort of closing, and this is an odd one. It's closing not because of his age, but because of his contract status. There's an awful lot of talk within the sport that if they don't win this year, McDavid might look elsewhere. He still has a year left on his contract after this season. But if you're the Oilers and you know you can't re-sign him, you can't let him go to free agency and not get anything for the greatest player in the game.
Very interesting from Steve Levy, of all people. That was on the Jim Rome Show, and Steve Levy, of course, ESPN, NHL. By the way, Steve, I think he is, but I know for sure, like, his son is a Bills fan. So I saw them down on the sidelines before the Bills 49ers Sunday night game in the snow. Said hi to him. We've seen each other over the years and met, but I know his son was decked out in Bills gear, so that was cool. But Steve Levy on Connor McDavid. McDavid has 1 year left on his deal. They can renegotiate starting July 1. I mean, we've seen some pretty blockbuster trades, including from that organization with a player who was considered the best in the world back in his prime, Wayne Gretzky. Hey, I'm just saying, it could happen.
By the way, Steve Levy, SUNY Oswego grad.
Yes, Oswego, yep.
That might be maybe the connection to the Bills.
100%. And I think probably grew up maybe in New York State, but I don't know. You have to look that up exactly where, but would have to find out. Anyway, let's get out to the Wester hotline right now because Jonathan Acosta is standing by. He is on WGRZ TV Channel 2. Our buddy John Scott, the sports director over there, and Jonathan Acosta works alongside him and many other talented people, and he joins me right now. Good morning to you, buddy. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Sal. How's it going?
I'm good. You spent time in Florida. You went to the University of Florida. You're a Gator. What was hockey like for you down there, your experience in Florida with hockey?
So it's funny because I was born first in Rhode Island, and obviously in the Northeast, like, hockey is big, but I actually never went to a hockey game until I was down in Tampa, went to my first hockey game over at Amalie Arena, and it was cool just going out there to the arena, and it's out by the water. It's like a very nice setting, and this was, I'd say, when the Lightning were still building towards that Stanley Cup run, so Steven Stamkos was really in his heyday and stuff with the Lightning. And it was like a very enjoyable experience, again, because of the players they had with Stamkos and Ben Bishop and Kucherov. And then after that, it really – I'd always sort of liked hockey from afar, but being able to really take in the sport for the first time sort of made me a bigger fan after that. So it was cool to kind of follow that run because then I think they went to that first Stanley Cup when they lost to the Blackhawks. It was either my senior year of high school or first year of college, and then just sort of following their journey and their progression to ultimately winning those Stanley Cups once I went away from Florida was pretty cool.
You know, I'll be honest, for me, I lived in Florida for 16 years. It was terrible for me. I hated watching a Florida team win the cup. Growing up in Buffalo, knowing the Sabres had never won a Stanley Cup. Hey, hockey's our thing, right up here, Northeast.
Exactly.
Hockey,
yeah.
Like, you get hockey down there, what are you doing? You don't even, I am not kidding you when I say this, John. Like, when I went to a couple of Lightning games early on when they, like, were kind of in their infancy, they were literally having pamphlets handed out about what icing was. Like, and I'm like, how do these people deserve a cup? It was unbelievable.
It's interesting because you have sort of, it's like two segments of the population. You have the people that from, like, a lot of them even transplants that, yep, like, know nothing about hockey, don't care about hockey. They care about their teams from back home. Maybe they're like a basketball or a baseball fan. But you do have like this nest of people who are really into hockey. Maybe it was something where one of my best friends from high school, his family was from Minnesota, and so he was actually a big hockey fan and a big Lightning fan. And so I actually went with him to the Lightning games and we would watch the games together. I had a teacher who was like a big Lightning fan. So you had like these sort of pockets where every once in a while you would find someone who was like a diehard fan, invested fan. And I think actually specifically in Tampa, the Lightning do a lot better than you would think for a Sun Belt team. I mean, especially during this successful run that they've had. I mean, they sell out pretty consistently.
And by the way, it's a great game experience. It's a great game experience. I've been to a game each this year and 2 years ago went down there, and they do a great job outside the arena. It's a really good fan experience when you go to a Tampa Bay Lightning game. Did you grow up a Bruins fan?
So
it's okay to say it here on WGR. It's okay. We'll allow it. We know people come from somewhere else sometimes.
So kind of, but honestly, growing up, like, I was a lot more into football, baseball, basketball. I'd say football and baseball were my two favorite sports. So, I like, for example, I grew up a huge Red Sox fan. Like, I was born in Pawtucket, so we had the AAA team for the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Like, literally around the block from my house. So I remember, like, I'm pretty sure, like, when I was young, like, Kevin Youkilis and Bronson Arroyo came through the Paw Sox. So, like, that was, like, my big team, the Red Sox. Obviously, 04 happened against the Yankees, and then just the players on that team, Manny Ramirez, David Ortiz, Pedro Martinez. Like, it's hard to not sort of fall in love with a team like that.
No doubt. So one of the reasons I reached out to you, and I said, you know what, I haven't talked to John on the radio in a while, and I know you've been covering Bill's minicamp and OTAs with John Scott, and I'll get to that, but I saw you were tweeting about the Rafael Devers trade, and I know that you were, or I should say, are a Red Sox fan and used to live up there. So I want to get your thoughts on that. Last night, he has two hits right away for the San Francisco Giants. I mean, how does that hit you as a Red Sox fan, especially with a team that has just swept the Yankees? They seem like they're finally on the trajectory they should, and then, bam, they get rid of their superstar hitter.
Well, it was sort of a gut punch, and it came out of nowhere. And unfortunately for the Red Sox, post-2018 World Series, in my opinion, they're one of the faces of MLB, right? You think of the biggest franchises in baseball. You think of the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Cubs, the Cardinals, and I think the Red Sox are clear in that conversation also. But since that last title in 2018, it doesn't seem like they've sort of conducted themselves in that manner. Obviously, it starts with the Mookie Betts trade, where here you have one of the best players in baseball. You're the Red Sox. You should be able to keep a guy like that long-term in Boston. But instead, they ship him out to L.A. He ends up winning the World Series with the Dodgers. And you get sort of the kind of feeling that this could lead to a similar thing. Here's Rafael Devers, this incredibly talented young hitter who was part of that 2018 World Series team. And it seems like the Red Sox, here they are, shipping them out to another team out west who's serious about fighting for a championship, where they're here. I don't know if they're trying to not play money ball, because they went out and made some serious additions in the offseason, and Garrett Crochet and Alex Bregman. But it's the prioritizing of stars like Mookie Betts and Rafael Devers. I feel like the Red Sox haven't been doing. And there's an interesting dynamic to it with Fenway Sports Group, where I don't know if it's because they don't just have the Red Sox anymore. They have Liverpool. And it's frustrating to see this happen with the Red Sox team, while in the same summer, Liverpool is going out and adding a huge German star in Florian Wirtz for over 100 million euros. So it's sort of that sort of dynamic where you really just wish the Red Sox would conduct themselves like the big team that they are.
Do you think that they can still contend in the AL East after this move?
It's one of those things where I think they can. Do I think they will? I just don't know. I mean, they've been getting really good pitching lately. So It's one of those things where good pitching sort of covers a lot of things. So if they get good pitching, I think they can go pretty far. We saw, I think, Brian Bale went like 7 innings in that outing against the Yankees. Garrett Crochet has been really good. Lucas Giolito just had a good start out west. So if they get that, they can contend. I just don't think overall as a team they're as good as the Yankees. And obviously Rafael Devers, specifically against the Yankees, always seem to play very well. So You lose a guy who used to help you in that department. So they have the young prospects that they've called up, Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, Marcelo Meyer. So I think it's one of those things where just be in the hunt maybe in September, and then maybe you let these young guys develop and you're in a better position to contend for a playoff spot maybe next year.
Yeah, believe me, I will tell you, I mean, I'm a big Yankee fan, as you know, and not having Devers, oh yeah. I mean, Garrett Cole,
I'm sure you're
Devers crushes Garrett Cole, and I know Cole's out for the year, but man, he is a Yankee killer, and I actually like Rafael Devers. I like Mookie Betts too. I mean, there's this romanticism and charm about some of your rivals. You know, I'm sure for you growing up, you know, you're a little younger, but Jeter, right? People are like, oh, I really respect Jeter. You know, for me, like watching Big Poppy and from afar, those rivalries, they matter. Did it hurt you more for Betts or for Devers?
For Mookie Betts, because I think Devers is good, but like Mookie Betts is like in that upper echelon of players. And it was like shortly after that World Series title. So I think that one certainly hurt a lot. But when you say that you enjoy seeing Devers leave the Red Sox, I think that's a good gauge of of how good a trade is. Is how do your rivals feel about this trade? And if your rivals are celebrating a move like this, I think it says a lot about the caliber of move that your team made.
Jonathan Costa, Channel 2 on the Wester Hotline with us. All right, you covered some of Bill's OTAs and mini camp. I'll ask you a question like this. Give me one player on offense and one player on defense that you kind of like took note of, I guess, for whatever reason that might be in your own way, other than Josh Allen, one player on offense and one player on defense.
one player on offense, and I say this because literally I saw him and I noticed the physical difference, was Keon Coleman. Like, he physically looked bigger, like more so to any extent than any other player on the offense. And sort of his introspectiveness when he talked to us during the offseason sort of showed a lot of maturity, I think, especially out of a guy who's still incredibly young, only going into his second year. And I think at certain points, you know, the Bills have made some additions at wide receiver. They go out and sign Josh Palmer. They bring in Elijah Moore. So there's all that excitement about those guys. But I really do think Keon Coleman is sort of positioned to sort of be that number two guy in terms of targets after Khalil Shakir. We've seen what Khalil Shakir can do. We know the role he has on that offense. But I think with the improvements to his body, and I think just the comfort level in year two with the team and everything, I really do think Keon Coleman is primed for a maybe second year breakout. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, he was playing very well his first year,
yeah,
leading into that injury. So is it something where does a year two breakout just consist of him putting a full year together the way he was doing his rookie year leading up to that injury? I think that's certainly possible, and I think that would be a welcome development for the team. On defense, I'm not going to say one player. I'm going to say just overall the rookie D linemen, they also stand out in terms of just sheer size,
yeah,
which is clearly something that the team was going for. And I think Landon Jackson has a potential to really be someone who contributes as a rookie this season. You look at the state of the pass rushers and, you know, Joey Bosa missing time in the offseason through injury. How ready is he going to be in training camp? You obviously have the situation with Michael Coit where he's going to be missing the first six games through suspension. So you know you have your vets in Greg Rousseau and A.J. Epenesa. Who's really going to step up and contribute behind them? Is Javon Solomon going to step up in his second year? I think the traits that Landon Jackson has, and they talked about his maturity and his knowledge. He was a productive pass rusher his last 2 years at Arkansas. I think he's in a really good spot to potentially be a guy who significantly contributes as a rookie this season.
Jonathan Acosta, Channel 2, here on the Wester Hotline. Bills wrapping up minicamp, OTAs, Josh Allen, of course, coming off the MVP performance. When people ask you about the Bills and kind of where their window is right now, do you get the same answer I do, which is, hey, as long as you have 17, the window's there? Or do you look at them in a little bit different light because they have now had some changeover, some guys that have kind of left the building and things that they've had to do on the roster?
Well, I think those guys leaving the building and the Bills still being in contention actually speaks to the fact of, hey, as long as they have Josh Allen playing at a Josh Allen level of play, yep, their window is open. I think that's true for any team in the NFL that has one of these quarterbacks in the upper tier, whether you're the Bengals with Joe Burrow, the Ravens with Lamar Jackson, obviously the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. When you have that sort of level of quarterback, you're always going to be in contention. And I think it holds true even to, we look at the previous era of stars when the Saints had Drew Brees and the Broncos and Colts had Peyton Manning and excuse me,
yep,
the Patriots had Tom Brady and the Bucks had Tom Brady. Those teams were always in contention as long as they had that quarterback and that quarterback was healthy. And I think Josh Allen, especially coming off this MVP season, is fully in terms of being in that tier. So, yes, there can be a changeover on the defense. You can have different coordinators. You can bring in different offensive weapons. But the quarterback has such an outsized impact in football that if you have that guy, you can move the pieces around it and still be in contention.
I like when I have people like you on because you follow a sport that I'm not super into, but I love the pageantry, and that's soccer. I know you're a big soccer fan. Yes. I enjoy the World Cup. I enjoy the Olympics. I couldn't tell you a lot of differences between a lot of the teams. It's not a sport I follow a lot, but when the United States is playing, I kind of pay attention because it's the United States and it's cool, and we're in the World Cup, and you know Italy's in there, and it's really good stuff. So I'll ask you this way: give me on a basic level. Should I be very worried about where the U.S. men's soccer team program currently still is, or is there hope?
I think there is cause for concern, unfortunately. Like, if you were to ask me to predict right now, how is the U.S. men's national team going to do the 2026 World Cup? I would say maybe they get out of the group stage and probably lose the first knockout stage game if they even get out of the group stage. There's just the run of form they've been in recently hasn't been good. And I was excited when they hired this manager, Mauricio Pochettino. He's someone I always like him when they hire international managers. I think they bring a different perspective. He's someone who had success at Tottenham, a club that until this season had never really experienced sort of success that he had brought them, at least in several decades. But it just seems the team, for whatever reason, hasn't played very cohesively in the games that they have had the A team. And you have sort of a weird dynamic right now where the best player on the team, Christian Pulisic, is sort of publicly fighting with the manager over – there was a situation where, like, he didn't want to play – he would play the friendlies but didn't want to play the Gold Cup because he wants to rest. But here you have the stars for every other country coming to play for their national team over the summer and not being as much of a concern. And for the U.S., this summer is incredibly important because the U.S. doesn't have to do World Cup qualifying because as a World Cup host, they're already automatically in the World Cup. So you have even fewer important games that matter compared to other countries that do have to go through World Cup qualifying. So every moment that you do get a chance to have all of your stars together and compete is incredibly important. And that's not something that's happening, for example, this summer because Pulisic is not playing with the U.S. men's national team. So I know they went out and won their first game at the Gold Cup. That's fine. That's not necessarily the caliber of teams that they're going to be playing in a World Cup setting, though. And like I said, I think their last friendly leading up to the Gold Cup, they played Turkey, and it was an abysmal performance. I want to say something like 4-0. And the U.S. really should not be in a position where they're losing to a team like Turkey 4-0. You know, if they want to draw 2-2, that's fine. But really, in terms of the build-up to the World Cup 1 year out, that should be the sort of team that the U.S. picks up a win against here at home in the United States and is really building momentum towards 2026. And that's just not something that's happening right now.
Good stuff, buddy. Thanks a lot for joining me today. Tell everybody what you got going on over at Channel 2 and NBC here as we get past the Bills mini camp portion and into training camp.
Yeah, so we'll have some more stories from the Bills. We did a bunch of sit-downs over the off season to kind of help bridge this gap between now and training camp. Definitely be on the lookout for – I did this cool story with Reed Ferguson. He's one of the investors in the Buffalo Pro Soccer team, actually. So I sat down and talked with him about what led him to joining this ownership group, what it's like being a professional athlete in Buffalo, and now – sort of being on the other side of this as a part owner and just sort of his journey through soccer to lead to this point, because he's also an investor in Swansea City out in the United Kingdom and is a big time soccer fan as of maybe like 10 years ago, and sort of how he got into the sport and what led him to this point of being an investor in the Buffalo Pro Soccer team.
Awesome stuff, man. Thank you so much. And tell everybody where they can follow you and all your work.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter @_JayAcosta, and then on Channel 2, if you tune in, watch in, you can find John Scott and myself every day.
Love it. All right, buddy, I'll talk to you soon. I'm sure we'll see each other in the Bills media room at some point soon.
Awesome. Appreciate it, Sal. Have a good one.
All right, you got it. Jonathan Acosta. Real good stuff there. I love it. Soccer. I like that. I don't pay too much attention to it other than when like the big matches are on. I know some of the names, but a lot of you are way more into it than me. Just not a sport that's ever I've really gravitated to, but I love the pageantry, so not downing it whatsoever. And I'm always interested in like where U.S. soccer is. So got to get Nick Mendola on soon to talk about that a little bit more. Good stuff from John on the Bills and, of course, hockey down in Florida where he went to the University of Florida. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll have a quick segment, and then it's Bulldog. Chris Bulldog Parker joins me at 11 a.m. at the top of the hour on WGR. When I heard that McDavid clip earlier from Steve Levy, I'm like, I literally thought, like, could I?
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Do a segment on what it would actually take for the Sabres. I mean, obviously it would be way too, it's not going to happen, but like what would it actually look like? He says, hey, I want to go back home. I want to go play for the Buffalo Sabres back home, right? Basically, like, you know, not far.
Home would be Toronto.
And right, but apparently the when he was going through the draft process, there was a lot of talk. I think his parents were Sabres fans or something. I don't know. Was that it? Owen, was that it? Like, were his parents Sabres fans? Or who he lived with or something? He can't hear him. Oh, he can't hear me. Sorry. Owen can't hear me. Either way, something like that. Anyway, what would it take? I don't know. All right. Either way, Chris Bulldog Parker on the way next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Now across from Ekholm to Bouchard. Reinhardt with the steal. Nice move. Goes to the net. Scores!
Sam Reinhardt. 4 goals last night. Back-to-back cup wins for him, Matthew Tkachuk, and the rest of the Florida Panthers. They beat the Edmonton Oilers, who go back-to-back losses in the Stanley Cup Final last year and this year. Sal Capaccio with you back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Got a treat for you today. Got my guy Bulldog on the Western Hotline. We're going to reverse roles a little bit. I said, Bulldog, you're always asking me questions about the Bills. I want to bring you on and ask you some damn questions. How's that sound,
pal? I need a fancy open, though. Where's my old WBEN theme song? That's what I needed there, Sal. I need you to go on to the interwebs and find that for us.
No idea where it is. We're going to call Steve Cishan right now and find that. We are going to do that. I promise you. Right. Hey, tomorrow I'm playing golf in Batavia for Eric Woods Foundation near the Evan Wood Fund. And I'm looking, and it's super windy, like 20 to 30 mile per hour winds tomorrow. And I'm like, oh my God, I hate playing golf in the wind. You play a lot of golf. Is that also like, do you just hate it in the wind? Do you like me? Or are you like, nah, it's okay?
Sal, the wind is since I haven't been a runner in a long time, but when I started running, I don't know, like 2009, 2010, and then injured myself to the point where I couldn't run anymore after trying to keep running, which was a horrible mistake. I started cycling, and now that I'm golfing, the wind, give me anything else. Wind, yeah. I despise the wind. Like, I'm a baby about it. I totally admit it. I'll get up in the morning on a day like today, and if it's like this windy, I'm looking out my windows right now and the trees are blowing, I won't go ride my bike outside. I don't enjoy it. I hate eating the wind. I hated it when I was running. I hate it when I'm bicycling, and I truly hate it when I'm golfing. I know I'm not going to go ride my bike or play golf in the snow, but I would rather it be 0 degrees and snowing with no wind than 40 and windy.
I totally hear you. I mean, it's going to be fun anyway, no matter what. So, sure. We'll be out there doing it, but... And it's for a great cause, but man, I'm like, of all the days, right? We got some really hot days coming up, and I'm like, oh my God, it's gonna be windy. I actually literally have not heard back yet. I just texted Pat Hammer recently, shortly, and said a little while ago, and I said, hey, are we talking sustained winds or just gusts 20 to 30? I need to know what to be prepared for here, how to dress, for this golf outing tomorrow. All right, so Chris Bulldog Parker joining me here. Obviously, co-host of Chopin the Bulldog here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Last night's win, everything in totality with the Florida Panthers, Sam Reinhardt winning, another Sabre winning another cup. I know he won last year. How much of it does it speak to you about the Sabres last night? Look, this is sports. Guys go on. He went to another team. He won. Or how much, did you watch that thinking about the Sabres and ruining it?
As I'm watching it, I don't find myself thinking about the Sabres. When it's time to reflect on it, when it's over, and like this morning, and I'm seeing like Sneaky Joe and Jeremy from our morning show, just having creative, which I appreciate, ways to look at like the differences in the organizations, the choices that have been made, then I start thinking about it. I mean, I did see a segment from the YouTube version of the show today where Joe was imagining a world where they kept everybody together long enough. Really, Eichel, Reinhardt, I guess you could include O'Reilly in that too, long enough, although you wouldn't have Tage Thompson if you'd done that, but still, kept it all long enough for guys to mature and grow, Dahlin to emerge as a top-flight defenseman, and what would that have looked like? And I don't know. I can't even – it makes my brain go tilt. to do this is just so far off to me. Yes, everything that happens in hockey that is successful, whether it involves former Sabres or not, shines a light on the futility of the Sabres to me. So I guess yes and no is my answer, or no and yes. While I'm watching it, I don't think about it. But afterwards, like now, reflecting on it, it's impossible to avoid thinking about the Sabres within it, because they feel like about a million miles away from it.
I was really struck last night when Sam Bennett won the Conn Smythe about how I'm like, man, Sam Bennett, 2014, like he's been in this league 11 years, right? 12 years, basically.
Right, it's the same Reinhardt draft. Reinhardt, yes. Ekblad, Bennett, all in the top five of that draft. Dreisaitl's the only outlier there, and he's on the other team.
That's
but
right.
Yeah, that's the top three out of the top four in that draft, I think.
And then it kind of just dawned on me, and I know it's kind of funny. Sam Bennett's still only 28 years old. He came in at 18. I had to look that up. I'm like, wait a minute. He seemed like this grizzled vet, you know, with the Conn Smythe trophy. But you know what I think really kind of came into more crystal clear focus for me last night? And you tell me how you feel is, boy, it does take a while in hockey. And I talked with your son about this earlier, right? We talk about goalies, but it kind of does. Like, yeah, Reinhardt was a good player here, but look what's happening. These guys are in their prime now, and they've been in the league 10-plus years.
I think Bennett is the best example of that. Because Reinhardt, I think, he didn't smash while he was here right away, but I think you could kind of see it. Ekblad immediately is a cornerstone player for the Florida Panthers. Dreisaitl immediately is one of the best players in the world on the Edmonton Oilers, you know, once he gets teamed up with McDavid, and that's just kind of off to the races. Bennett was kind of in the wilderness. It took a little while. He was looking like the most busty, I would say, of those top picks. It really wasn't until he got in a spot where they could find the exact right role for him, and he kind of leaned into this sort of productive playoff dirtbag guy, and like he's the envy. Whoever's going to get him is going to feel great about getting like the definition of a playoff player, because he's not even right. He's not even like a 60-point guy in the regular season, but he's going to be paid like maybe an 80 or 90-point guy in the regular season because of the playoff performances and the grit, the willingness to do just about anything that it takes. I mean, we can be mad at it if he's elbowing our guy in the jaw and knocking him out with a concussion, or sucker punching Brad Marchand last year in the playoffs when Brad was still on the Bruins.
Yeah.
He's over the line a lot, but it's one of those dudes that, you know, if he's on your team, you're like, I just love, he's so determined. He'll do whatever it takes. You know, if you're playing against him, you look at it and think, that was disgusting. I can't root for that. He ran the goalie again. But, you know, that's hockey.
Yeah, and the Sabres, when you think about their roster and how it's constructed, you know, when you think about guys like Bennett, Reinhardt, these guys that have been around a little while, yeah, they have some guys that are like in their late 20s. But, you know, this is what I just said to Owen and Josh a little while ago, last hour. When I hear, oh, the Sabres are the youngest franchise in the league, my response now is, again? Who cares?
Right.
Like, there's something to be said for young talent, Bulldog, right? But I think what's really happening here, when you think about how things have gone for these recent cup champions, is, yeah, it's nice. But where are you getting your guys who've been around and can be a part of the kind of group that can lead them, not just be the talent?
Right. You know, what you mentioned, like Bennett and his draft and how it kind of blows your mind how long he's been in the league and yet he's still just 28 years old during these playoffs. Right. This is time passing, and someone like me who's going to be 60 in a couple of weeks not wanting to recognize how quickly it goes by sometimes. I heard during these playoffs, Edmonton was one of the oldest teams in the league this year, roster-wise. And when I heard the announcer say that during a game, it was just like in the flow of play, you know? They didn't dwell on it. They didn't show a graphic or anything, so I don't remember if it was the oldest or third oldest, but it was one of the oldest groups in the league. And I thought, well, McDavid just got their weight. That was 10 years ago.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
It's amazing.
And Dreisaitl was the year before that, and it's just crazy. Yeah, being the youngest team, I think we're all done with that here.
Yep.
You know, and the promise that it shows. Because, you know, what's the promise? The promise is worthless. You got to do it. You got to get in. You got to prove that you belong. And being the youngest, I think, almost provably is not going to get it done these days in the NHL. The league has kind of swung back. You know, for a while, I appreciated and really didn't mind the Sabres' willingness to draft the similar type of a smallish, skilled, good skating forward. Okay, that's fine. The game is leaning that way, and I'm good with it. And in the span of like 5 years, it has swung back to big, mean, physical, you know, not fighting, but there's an edge to the game now that Florida has brought with them, that Edmonton has learned how to play with, that Dallas has, that if you're going to compete, you have got to have a physicality there that the Sabres just are miles from right now.
So what's the play then? You think about the Sabres offseason, and I know that they have a lot of restrictions with guys as far as wanting to be here and having their own choices and no movement clauses. I get that, but you look at Marner, you look at Bennett, you look at Marchand, right? Are those two pie in the sky? Is there anyone you'd really want to make a run at, or is there another way to go about it?
Sal, I don't know. I can't imagine a scenario where any one of those players you mentioned even takes a call, let alone really considers signing here. Why would you? You know, I think that where you end up is in a situation where you have to pay double the price for half the talent is where you are. And that's an exaggeration, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to get the best guys, and you're going to overpay for the other guys. And that is, I mean, that is borderline a hand tied behind your back. So I don't know what they're going to do or what the way forward should be, because I don't think it's very much like the Bills mid-drought where, you know, oh, Peyton Manning is going to leave Indianapolis. What? Yeah, the Bills, don't bother calling. He's not going to come here. That's what it feels like with the Sabres right now. I don't know how you get better trading away J.J. Paterka if it comes to that. I mean, I just don't know how you win that trade. You could, I suppose. It's possible you get the right guy and he, you know, replaces that production and maybe then some. But I find it really hard to believe that that's going to happen. And, you know, I'm almost tempted, Sal, for them to, despite all their, you know, we only want guys who want to be here and all that, that really started when Reinhardt and Eichel and Ristolainen, to an extent, all got traded because it was clear they didn't want to stay here anymore. So the organization decided to fall back and regroup and come with this, you know, Alex Tuck grew up in the Syracuse area and like, oh, everybody is, you know, we're all going to sing songs and it's going to be great because everybody is going to be pulling the same rope and all that. Man, I think at this point, if I'm the Sabres, I've got all the leverage except for whether or not Paterka actually wants to commit. I might just flex every muscle I have and just say, fine, we're gonna qualify you, we're gonna bridge you, whatever we gotta do. If you wanna go to Germany, well then we lose. But that's really your only alternative other than playing for us. And I think you might have to just dare him and hope that you start winning enough that guys like him then decide, you know what, it is good here, I want to stay. Because I think if he doesn't want to stay and he gets traded, and I don't know what's going to happen with Alex Tuck. My antenna have been up ever since locker cleanout day with him. I don't mean to make something out of nothing, but him sounding the way he sounded, I haven't thought about it. I got to talk to my wife. You've been around locker cleanouts, yeah. Sal. You know what that sounds like, right? That is hardly, I can't wait to get started next year. I'm looking forward to committing to the organization and being a part of the solution and all that. It was not the opposite of that speech, but it certainly was not confirmation that he's comfortable with being the face of this. And I feel like if that guy doesn't want to stay, and again, I don't know that he doesn't. I'm just going on how he sounded, and that can be risky. I could be wrong. But if that guy doesn't want to stay, it's going to feel like time to turn the lights off.
Chris Bulldog Parker joining me here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on the West Her Hotline. In a totally different bucket, you also have to deal with the Devon Levi situation. And I mean, it doesn't have to be contentious necessarily, but money-wise and what your vision for him is. And obviously it can be a two-way contract, but how would you go about playing the goaltender situation, his RFA status, and the roster?
Well, I mean, I don't think a contract should be that hard, and I'll challenge you. I don't think that he signs a two-way contract. He may end up in Rochester, but he gets paid whatever he's gonna get paid as an RFA when he goes to Rochester. He's that status of player. Two ways are more for guys that are borderline, and even though he isn't entrenched as an NHLer, I don't think he's either like some journeyman status that he just has to take that. So I don't think that'll happen, but I think they'll get him signed. I just don't know what you can hope for other than Luukkonen finds his groove back and Levi supports him. I suppose there's a big swing out there. Maybe you trade with Vancouver and get Thatcher Demko. Maybe you sign a veteran journeyman-type free agent to back up Luukkonen and let Levi keep playing in Rochester, because him being pushed in is not good. We've already watched that two different times and it didn't end well, but it might be time for him to actually be in the NHL. So I'm open to that. I think they're in a really tough spot considering that they just got Luukkonen signed to an extension. I think as much as you'd want to get better there with all the other issues they've got, man, I'd be surprised if they ended up, and I don't think I can really advocate for a better idea right now than going forward with Luukkonen and Levi in goal. Mm-hmm. I just think you've committed to Luukkonen, and Levi, I think, could play 30 games, 40 games, you know, split time. Maybe he takes the job. I don't know. I just have a hard time seeing them pivot away from what they did with Luukkonen based on, you know, a pretty shaky year last year.
Are you still a Red Sox fan? Like, do you follow them closely? I'm curious about your thoughts on the Devers trade.
I don't closely. No, I mean, they're still the team I'm most interested in, but I don't, you know, I've got my ESPN app set up so that I get their scores every day at the top of the page. So I keep track, but I don't look at the standings. I don't know how many games back they are.
I'm the same way with the Lakers, by the way. It's exactly kind of the thing. Way I am.
Like, it's not day to day, but you know, the Red Sox are on. You know, okay, you know, no hockey game. Okay. Right. You know, I that'll get my attention, but no, really, the funny part about it is, well, not funny, really, it's kind of sad, is the last time they did this with a star player was Mookie Betts 5 years ago, and that was, I was already kind of on the ropes, Sal. I learned a lot about myself through the Red Sox winning as many times as they did. It was like four World Series titles from 04 to like 18, and that, I was in it for the desperation. I was in it for the pain, I think. Like, it kept me coming back. Once they won, I didn't feel it as much as I had prior to 04. And so I was already drifting. When they traded Mookie Betts, homegrown, awesome player, seemingly willing to do anything you want him to do, just an easy guy to root for, right? Little guy, but super talented, power, speed, defense, all of it. And they divested themselves of him. What are you doing? Like, you're acting like you're the Kansas City Royals or the Minnesota Twins or the Pirates. Like, you don't trade Mookie Betts if you're the Boston Red Sox, unless you're more worried about subsidizing your soccer adventures or your whatever else you're doing. I don't respect the organization. I don't know how the Devers thing will turn out. I do think it was a bad look for him to refuse to try to play first base. And now he's in San Francisco and going, I'll play wherever you want. I'll do anything. Anything goes. So maybe it's just the way the Red Sox handled it that warrants the criticism, more so than Devers being, you know, not flexible. But it's gross. Like, if I were really day-to-day into them like we all are into the Bills and Sabres, man, I'd be pissed about that trade.
I could imagine. Hey, I'm just pissed that the Yankees haven't scored in three straight games. They've been shut out for three straight games. It's unbelievable. Right. Going back to the Red Sox on Sunday, by the way. Chris Bulldog Parker, a couple more minutes with him. We'll talk more Bills when I'm on with Shopin the Bulldog, because that happens frequently, obviously. Wanted to get his thoughts on some other things going on. But also, the ride for Roswell is coming up. It says, ride with Bulldog in the WGR team. What's the training been like for you?
The training is the same as always, as long as it's not windy.
Mm-hmm.
On days when it is, you know, I don't want to go outside, I've got a trainer set up in the basement, and I do that for 90 minutes to 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. I kind of take the weekends off. And, in fact, I got up an hour earlier, because this is still, right now, as we're talking, is sort of in that workout window for me, and I wanted to make sure I was done by the time, you know, I was going to come on with you. So I got up a little earlier and did that already. I feel good. 45 miles for us. I mean, people do longer. There's 65 miles, even 100 miles, but we do 45. It's a week from this Saturday, and just a tremendous event. This is my fifth time in a row doing it, and I regret that I haven't been doing it the entire time. It's just so well run, it's really fun, and it feels good. I mean, what could be better than that? It feels good to get the exercise, it feels good to be out with so many like-minded people that enjoy that kind of recreational activity, and the event, like the volunteers and everything about it, is just tremendous. The Peloton on Friday that rides from Roswell out to UB, where that is the staging area for the actual ride on Saturday, has been riding past my house for 25 years. And on Friday, it's like Friday early evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always loved seeing it go by. I've never been a part of it because it's during my show, so I haven't taken a day off to do it. But it's just such a cool event. I really, really love it.
I have so much respect for you guys riding. I'll be on stage talking about it. I'll be helping to kick it off on stage. You'll be riding. But it's really cool how it's all come together. And I agree with you. And we went over to Roswell and we did a show out there recently. It was just amazing seeing how everything was put together from where this all began. And I didn't even realize it'd been going on for as long as it has, almost a quarter century, basically.
Well, 30 years, yeah.
Over that, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it is really tremendous. And I want to say on the air, because it's largely social media where I do my fundraising,
yeah.
But the people out there, my Facebook friends, Twitter followers, even folks on Blue Sky have helped me get to an all-time high.
Love
fundraising
it.
And I'm really, really happy about that. And obviously it's everybody out there that's doing it for me and responding to you know, the bat signal when I put it out there. But I'm really flattered and really, really proud to have so many people behind, you know, me and of course the whole ride.
Love it, love it. All right, before you go, I cannot believe this, but we did it. In fact, Josh did it. Here it is. From Steve C. Sean's page. I told you, that's where we'd find it.
Oh, no.
The Bulldog Open from WBEN. Here we go.
Bulldog, talking sports. He's Bulldog, talking sports.
Do I know the word?
I don't know. Oh.
Oh, wow.
All right, so I have a jingle that gets played.
You're making me cry.
Oh, it's amazing. And people, like, I have a jingle that gets played, and, like, people will send me videos of their kids singing the Sal Capaccio song. That one needs to be replayed and played more often for people to do the same thing because it's so catchy. Tell me the backstory on that.
Next question. I'm
okay.
Not here to talk about the past. I don't remember.
Okay.
I do not remember. Ken Kaufman used to, you know, produce jingles, write jingles, and do a lot of stuff at the station back then. And I'm pretty sure that's him playing piano, but I don't know who's singing. But I'm pretty
amazing.
Sure I'm pretty sure he produced that. Ken Kaufman.
Tom Sitch did the Sal Capaccio jingle,
right.
And he was, you know, producing for you guys, and it was that song "Say Geronimo," right? That came out. I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool. And you know, it became kind of a thing where, oh, well, it's based on another song. I think that's an original, right? I don't think that's based on another song. Right? I think that's an original.
I believe so, yes.
That's amazing. I love it.
I hope I got some of that right about the origins. I really don't. I don't know. When I brought it up, I thought, "Oh no! If you find it and ask me, where I'm dead in the water over here."
Well, so. Josh did a great job, but now that we did this, you know we have it in our system now. Just so you know, now okay. It's in our system.
Well, next time you call me, Sal.
You got it, buddy. Hey, I'll see you next Saturday, if not before then. Great job on the ride for Roswell and getting the team together and doing what you're doing out there. And really, really proud, man. So thanks a lot for joining me today.
Thank you. I appreciate you mentioning that. And for all the riders out there, the thousands and thousands of riders out there, we thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. That is Chris Bulldog Parker here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. That was great. That open backplate on WBEN back in the, late 90s, early 2000s, late 90s. There you go.
That was actually from 1996. There's like a 5-minute... thing with other stuff from that day.
The final year of the odd, right? I think the final year of the odd, or the first year, the final year of the odd, right? 96 was when the Whalers. So 96 was like end of 96 and then opening of 96. And so both, right? I think that was it for the odd. All right, we'll take a time out here. We'll come back. If you're on hold, stay there. I'll get to you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Just, I'm so lucky to be on this team with this group of guys. Just a special group, and we got to be a dynasty now. It's 3 years in a row, final, two championships. This team is so special, and I just, Stanley Cup champion, this never gets old.
With all due respect to Matthew Tkachuk, I understand why he would say that. I do not agree that it's a dynasty. I think you need to win a third or have a very prolonged, sustained period of success with multiple more than two. I think you need more than two over a certain period of time. I know they've gone to three. I used the example yesterday. I don't think we consider the Heat with LeBron James a dynasty. 4 years, four finals appearances, two wins. I don't think we consider that a dynasty. Maybe you do. But anyway, it's a good discussion. It's a good sports radio topic, right, for the summer. 803-0550, the number to call. What did you think about last night with the Panthers winning? What does it say about the Sabres to you, if anything? Mark in Coconut Creek, Florida. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for holding, by the way.
Hey, no problem. I was just, what you just said. I don't know. They may be a dynasty in today's age of free agency and the way things are set up. I mean, I see that as, I want to see the next team that wins two in a row. I'll be surprised if it happens, unless these guys three-peat. But anyway, sort of, I just wanted to, watching that game last night, just kept thinking about the Sabres and just what a gap between those two teams. It's amazing. And then somebody mentioned to me about, and you probably know more about this, but the Sabres, I guess they're only $2 million above the floor, I guess. Well, I think that's a $50 million floor. And they're $23 million under the cap. And the Panthers pay their top six forwards $25 million more than the Sabres' six top forwards. So, you know, we can get on Kevin Adams and these players, but, you know, I think it all goes back to Pegula, how serious he is about having a hockey team down here. And, you know, he may want to think about unloading this team if he's not going to get serious, because if he's just using it for a little tax break to offset the bill stuff, I just think we got to look more at Pegula if he's serious about having a hockey team down here. So, just interested to hear your words on that, and great show as always, man. I got to get back to the elbow room and do some partying with the cup.
Oh, so, man. You're rubbing it in down there. But thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. I'll give some thoughts on this. You're not wrong. The Sabres are not spending as much as they can. They have an internal cap. I think that's clear. So I think you do need to see more of a commitment from that end, from the finances and resources. But if you look around the league, they are comparable actually to a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, actually, to be honest with you, like as far as some of the money spent. Now, I'm looking at Puckpedia. That's one of the websites you can go to. And I think they are taking into account some of the free agents and things like that. And I will say, once you do, Mark, factor in some of their RFAs and they tender them, that's going to really bump them up. So, yes, Mark, they do have this all this cap space and they're not spending. They're going to have to eat that cap space up a lot with some of their RFAs, like J.J. Paterka, like Ryan McLeod, Devin Levi. Like, guys like that are going to be eating up into their cap space. So, yes, you're right. Like, you need to see, and I agree, more of a commitment from finances, from resources. We've talked about that over the years. I also think I take a look at, like, some of the cap space and where they are compared to other teams in the league. They have a lot of growth they can have. They have a lot of room that they can have that they can use. They're also not really... they're not like unique even for some teams that are some of the better teams in the league on how they're paying. I think it's about allocation of dollars is what it is. It's not necessarily just the dollars. It is the dollars. It's more about allocation of the dollars. What was the stat today that if you looked at what the Panthers did with their fourth line, Josh, I think like they're paying them pretty much peanuts. And then if you go way ahead, like you go to their top players, that's where they're kind of putting their resources and really making sure that they pay their guys. And look, Bobrovsky's making a lot of money too, right? I mean, that's a big deal as far as their goalie's concerned. So I understand. I think the overall point is right. You know, you need to see more of a commitment from the Sabres and resources and finances, and we'll see where that goes.
So the fourth line for the Panthers,
yeah,
combined with their third pair on defense is like roughly, I think, around $4 million. And then Jeremy did the math for the Sabres, and the Sabres is about $9 million for the same positions.
Hmm. I mean, I'm looking at Puckpedia, and again, I don't know, like, I have to, this is projected cap hit right now with counting like free agents that haven't been signed. You know who has a lot of room is the Jets, and think how good they were. Like, Winnipeg's built a roster with not spending a ton of money, to be honest with you, right? Like, there are teams like that. The Hurricanes are there. So the Maple Leafs are one of the teams right there with the Sabres, by the way. You'll have some of that money spent on some of their free agents that are coming up. The draft is a week from this weekend, so it's the next weekend. It's June 28th, 29th, I think, right? The first night is that Friday night, and then you get into Saturday with the NHL draft. We'll see. The Sabres have the number 9 pick overall. We'll see how all of that shakes out. Here's one for you that I thought was interesting. This was, I saw a tweet and I replied to it in a way that I want to tell you too, which is this is from a radio host. I don't know if he does radio anymore, but somebody I follow still on social media. He used to do radio in Toronto. Real good guy named Greg Brady. He used to be up in Toronto radio. And he wrote yesterday, repeat Stanley Cup champs since 67-68 when they went to 12 teams. And you go back to 67-68, you start there. Canadians had two. Flyers had two in the 70s. Canadians had four in the 70s. Then the Islanders had four in the 80s. That's the first dynasty I remember, like I said. And then you had Oilers for two, separated by Oilers for two. Then Penguins for two, Red Wings for two, Penguins for two, Lightning for two, Panthers for two. It's either like you get two and that's it. Nobody gets three or more. What's crazy is, totally off topic, the Oilers won 4 out of 5. The only thing that kind of kept them from winning was maybe Steve Smith's own goal off Grant Fuhr. If Steve Smith, now, it was game 7 and it was a 2-2 game. They might not have won. But Josh, if Steve Smith, former assistant coach of the Sabres, by the way, doesn't shoot the puck in off his own goalie from behind the net as he's trying to clear, the Oilers might have won 5 in a row, and no one's ever done that in the NHL. In the expansion era, at least.
I didn't realize they were that close. I wasn't alive, so.
It's amazing, though, when you think about it, because you see Oilers, 84-85, gap in 86, Oilers, 87-88. And you're like, oh my God, if Steve Smith doesn't have the own goal, they might win that series against the Flames, and they might wind up winning 5 in a row. They very well could have. I think they were the number one team that year, actually. I don't even know if the President's Trophy was a thing back then, but they were the number one team that year. But anyway, since then, the only repeat winners, Penguins in the early 90s, Red Wings in the late 90s, Penguins in 16-17, Lightning in 2021, Panthers. That's it. Now, I say that's it by, well, there's quite a few of those. That's, you only get two in a row, though. You're not allowed to win three. You can go to three. You can't win three. So who's the next one? I saw some odds, early odds on the Panthers. I think they are the number one team. Let me look here real quick. I have to go make sure. The number one team. Oh, here's something fun for you, and funny, maybe. If you look at the Stanley Cup odds for next year, the Sabres are not last. You wouldn't expect them to be necessarily. Can you tell me the, you see it? Do you see it on my sheet, my screen? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, according to this, from BetMGM, there are 4 teams below the Sabres right now for current Stanley Cup odds next year.
Hey, that's pretty good.
Do you want to guess the 4 teams?
Chicago.
Blackhawks, yes. They're the second, tied for the worst odds, sorry.
San Jose?
They're tied for the worst odds. Those are the 2 worst, okay. Yes.
All right, so then
who are the 2 teams?
More.
One, I'm like, oh, really? Like, I didn't,
I kind of want to say Utah, but I don't think that's right.
No, they're getting not.
Much, they're getting much better very quickly. Oh, Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Sabres have better odds as of right now to win the Cup next year than the Pittsburgh freaking Penguins.
Well, there's
hang the banner, baby. I love that.
There's all these sources and insiders around the NHL being like, yeah, apparently the Penguins are the only team that's being considered as rebuilders amongst NHLers.
It's
amongst
amazing,
the
right?
NHL community.
And yet they're still holding on to Crosby and Malkin.
Right.
I think they're in this spot. I'll talk about the Penguins in a second. The last team, though, actually, Tim, I'm a little surprised that the Sabres can't beat this team.
Ooh, Philadelphia.
No.
Well, they can't beat Philadelphia. But
other conference.
Other conference. Seattle?
Yes. Seattle is listed at
really
worse than the Sabres odds, yeah.
Hmm.
And I don't...
That's interesting. I mean, they're not necessarily miles better than the Sabres, but I figured maybe they'd be a little higher than that.
I think the Penguins might not even be in a rebuild. I think literally, I'm not kidding. I think what the Penguins might be doing is saying, we just want to hold on to our stars for another year because fans love them and we're not going to be very good and that's okay.
Yeah, but
then we'll try to get better after that.
How much do fans really love that though? Like
they don't.
If you're a Penguins fan, yes, you love Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, but a part of you is probably like, hey, I don't want to A, see my team lose and B, see my favorite players lose.
I agree.
So why don't we just mutually part ways and, you know, call it quits. And because then
I think they're afraid of doing that, to be quite honest. They don't want to do it.
Think about it though. Like Crosby could go wherever and probably win. Same with Malkin. I mean, Malkin's probably just going to go back to Russia anyway. There's reports about that already that he's going to do it next year. But if you're a Penguins fan and you love these players and your team, I feel like at this point, with all the winning you've had and all the success you've had, it might be okay to just say, hey, we need to start this rebuild now. You can still go on and win, especially the guys like Crosby and Malkin, because not to say that they're, you know, spring chickens or anything, but they can definitely still compete on an NHL roster. Like we saw.
Oh,
that this
I don't disagree with that, especially Crosby, but.
But you can't
I
have
think
them
they,
be.
To me, the way I read it is their organization, they're so attached to such these, they're so beloved, these players.
Right.
They kind of know in their heart they have to move on, even though Crosby's still really good. But they're just like, we're just not going to do it. We're not going to be that good anyway. Like we might, it's either kind of all in or all out. And, and like, hey, we'll let them just play and be great. And maybe, you never know. Look what happened with Marchand. You never know. You get to the deadline and you say to Crosby, dude, we're going to let you go somewhere and win if you want.
And also, look at Alex Ovechkin. Everyone was like, oh, well, the Capitals' sole reason now is just to get him to Gretzky's record, and then that's it. But then the Capitals go on this crazy run this year, and they go into the playoffs.
They did.
Like
everybody wants to be the Capitals when they get a little bit older, and everybody thinks they're done, and then suddenly they go on a run. Right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. So you never know.
It's kind of weird. Real quick, before we hit the last time out, the Panthers aren't the favorite for next year, as of right now. They are not. Who do you think is? Who's the favorite to win the Cup as of right now?
Part of me wants to say Edmonton, but I'm going to say Dallas.
Dallas is fourth. Edmonton is number one.
Edmonton is? Okay. I thought maybe just
Colorado is number three.
Ooh.
Edmonton, Florida, Colorado, Dallas. The Oilers and Bills are living like the same existence. They just are, right? I mean, they have the best odds to win the Stanley Cup. The Bills are right there as the best odds to win the Super Bowl are right up there. They've been there. They've come so close. They can't close the deal. They have a super duper star in their sport.
Some say the best in the league.
Some say the best in the league at either one. That's right. I do say that about McDavid and Josh Allen, I think. I think I say that about Josh Allen. That's right. We'll roll with that as we had our last time out here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Wrapping up your Wednesday after this time out. What do we leave on the bone today? Anything? Because I'm not going to be here for the rest of the week. Anything? I got a golf event tomorrow out of Batavia for the Eric Woods Foundation, the Evan Wood Fund over at Oshai Children's Hospital. That's going to be fun to play. So I'll do that. In the wind, it's all good. We'll do that.
There was Caitlin Clark getting beat up last night.
Well, she got poked in the eye and she got into a scuffle, right?
I saw
that a little bit. All right. Listen, Have a great rest of your week. You got Josh and Zach and Derek and Joe, and everybody's going to be around, right, for the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show the next couple of days. And then I will be back with you on Monday. Sabres Live up next. One Bills Live follows that. And then Chope and the Bulldog at 3. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday and week here on WGR.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.